This is the I Can Do It Hour with your host, Diane Ray.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. I hope everybody is relaxed, ready to jump back into the week after a long Thanksgiving holiday that we had here in the States. So we're all still recovering a little bit from that, trying to get back into the groove here. But today I've got a really fascinating book and an amazing story to share with you. So I hope you stay with me for this hour and check this out. Mary Terhune is joining me today, and we're talking about her new book. It's called Out of the Blue, A True Life Experience of Awakening, Revelation, and Transformation. And the story is really fascinating. Mary shares her personal journey of spiritual awakening, mystical encounters, and visions, as well as universal truths that were revealed to her in this process. So it's a pretty cool story. And Mary joins me today. I'm so glad that we could talk about the book.
Hi, Diane. Thank you so much.
Well, welcome to the show. Yeah, I'm glad you could join us. Really amazing experience several experiences your whole life that you've been through here that you share with us in the book. And it's pretty incredible. So I wanted to let people know a little bit about the origin of how the story came to us here, because I think that's pretty interesting in itself. So your book was first published back in 2012, and then you had it revised and edited for release now. And there's a great connection about Dr. Wayne Dyer actually bringing the story to us here at Hay House. So I was hoping you could share that with people, because I think it's just kind of a testament that, you know, miracles can happen. And it really did in this case for you.
Right. Yes. Well, actually, the first self-published book, which I completely revised for this new one, was in 2006 after I suffered a major heart attack. I actually died and they brought me back. And I knew that I had to write the story of what had happened in my life through these mystical awakenings. And in within July, with regard to Wayne, it was in July of 2013, actually, that I was sitting with a friend of mine at work, and I turned to her and I said, you know, I feel like there's another big chapter that's about to come in my life. And she goes, well, what do you want to see happen? And I said, well, I feel that the message in my book and the experiences I had should be shared with many people. And she said, well, then you're going to have to send it to someone like, oh, I don't know, maybe Wayne Dyer. And I said, really? And she goes, yeah, I think his audience might be interested. And she said it with so much force that I finished work, went home, took a book, brought it to the post office, and mailed it to the address, because I didn't know his address. But I knew that he was in Maui, Hawaii, so I sent it to Dr. Wayne Dyer, best-selling author, Maui, Hawaii, with a zip code that I thought might work. I had no address or anything, and I mailed it off, and to my astonishment, 6 days later, I got a phone call. It was midnight here in Boston, where I live, and I picked up the phone. I'm not normally up at midnight, but I was up at that time, and the phone was on, and I didn't recognize the number, but I picked it up, and I said, hello, and he goes, hello, is this Mary Terhune? And I said, yes. He goes, well, this is Wayne Dyer. And I said, oh, I was so astonished. I said, oh, hi, how are you?
Like a crank call or something. This is who?
And he goes, well, I just want you to know that I received your book, and I read the chapter on self-realization, and it was the best chapter of self-realization I have ever read. And would you please come in January to my Divine Love Seminar as a surprise guest author? And, of course, I said yes, and the rest is history. I arrived there, and, of course, nobody knew who I was in the audience, and he was so sweet with it. He's on stage, and he said, you know, I received this book from, I don't know, something called Mary something. I don't really know how to pronounce her last name, but at any rate, I love the chapter on self-realization. So he stood up, and for 20 minutes, he read the entire chapter. And people loved it. And he goes, wouldn't you want to meet the person who wrote this? Don't you wish you could? And people go, yes, yes. And he goes, well, I just happened to have brought her here. And everyone starts to laugh, and I come up on stage. And afterwards, it was very well received, and Wayne announced that Hay House would be publishing a revised edition.
Wow. I mean, that's like a dream come true, you know, something that so many authors would kill for, really, you know, to have that experience. So that's really amazing. And Dr. Dyer was like that. You know, he would reach out to people and projects that he felt really passionate about and close to, and he would make sure that they came to light, which is what he certainly did in your case. So that's pretty amazing. And I know that the subject matter is something that Dr. Dyer was really interested in and had read about, you know, all through his life and was, you know, kind of looking for that, you know, that kind of experience. So I just wanted to ask you, what would your definition of self-realization be, or self-actualization?
Well, self-realization gives us the experience of the real divine us. It is a complete and profound immersion in the experience of awakening to one's consciousness, one's true essence and nature, beyond the ego identification. You know, we all come in thinking, we're this individual, this is my life as Mary, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a nurse, I do this for a living. And no one ever told me that I had a different identification, that was just a temporary identification. No one ever told me, you're divine, your essence is divine. And it was only through an amazing awakening that I had back in 1984 during a life crisis, where I was, at that time, I was sort of an agnostic. I didn't really know if I believed in God, although I had a Catholic upbringing, and I wasn't into the dogma, although I loved Jesus, but I just wasn't into the dogma. And I had this incredible awakening as I was at the lowest part of my life, and I felt all was lost. And I just remember sobbing so, so deeply. And I said, God, you know, just let me die. I can't deal with this anymore. And in that moment when I just let myself cry and cry to a depth I'd never known, in that moment, my mind just stopped. It stopped in agony. And in that moment, boom, a light filled the room and began speaking to me. And I felt this immense peace come over me. And I recognized the voice, and it was the voice of Jesus. Now, you might say, how do you know it was Jesus? All I can say is the soul knows its own. And he began speaking to me different revelations about judgment and forgiveness and the ego and disease. And there were seven revelations that he spoke to me, and I felt my whole body open, all my chakras open, and I felt this amazing wave of energy through me that I'd never experienced before, and this amazing peace and light, and I felt so protected, I guess is the word. And then at the end of this whole session with him, he would talk about forgiveness, and then he would give me an experience of it in my own life, and then the experience of it that he meant what true forgiveness was. It's really to forgive yourself for everything that had to happen. And so he went on like this for a while, and then eventually his light withdrew from the room, and there I was in this amazing state of grace, and I went outside to kind of orient myself to the backyard, and I looked out, and everywhere I looked, I saw these photonic little packets of light, which I didn't understand at the time. All this light covered everything, the trees, everything glistened, everything. And then I had the experience of tremendous love coming from this light. And I realized, oh, my gosh, this is paradise, but we've made it into something else. And at some point later in my spiritual journey, I came to understand that these packets of light is the divine consciousness that precedes all manifestation. External, outward manifestation. And it's divine in origin, divine in essence, and it's eternal. And this I got to experience in all of its fullness 4 years later, in 1988, after I had a spiritual initiation. Then I had the full experience of self-realization, complete and full, which was so astonishing to me.
Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's actually considered quite rare to have, you know, those kind of that self-actualization experience is considered quite rare.
It's rare and it's classic. However, what my message is that it's now time for everyone to reclaim their divine nature. And the message, the beautiful message that I was given at that time, when this cloud of all-knowing came over me and I realized it was God or Brahman, the essence of eternal nature, and the voice said, here is your divinity, the divinity that awaits all mankind. Your soul wants full expression now. This is the present. This is the living present. This is living. This is real.
Wow.
And as those words permeated me, my whole life story of Mary kind of rolled up like a book, rolled up my body up the chakras, came to the third eye in my forehead, dissolved into divinity, and I had the full experience. Aham Brahmashmi. I am Brahman. I am that I am, and all this is my creation. And as I had that experience, I looked over. I was at a meditation center. I looked over the yard, and up in the clouds, at 100 feet up, was a cloud, and Jesus was standing in it with his arms raised. And I had never realized that these visions that people have are real, as if looking at any like a chair or anything else, a tree. There he was, and his hands were raised up, and the whole cloud raised up with him and disappeared into the sky.
And this was the second experience that you're describing now that happened at a retreat center.
After
the first one that you had back in 1984.
Correct.
Yeah, just to clarify. So yeah. I had a couple of questions about, you know, the first experience that you had. And I'm wondering, do you think that in your case, you experienced connection with Jesus, and it, you know, you were brought up in a Catholic upbringing, as was I. And I'm just wondering if, you know, other people were to experience something like that, if they were in, you know, brought up in a different tradition or a Hindu tradition or a Jewish tradition or whatever. Yeah. I mean, do you think that each person, that experience is individual, I guess?
Well, it's very individual, but, you know, I never experienced these great beings with Jesus and Buddha and Krishna. I never experienced them as belonging to any particular religion or any particular country or any particular belief system. They were just pure divine nature. And that was my experience. Of Jesus, that, you know, these great beings are sent out of divine to remind us of our true nature, and more than that, to say, you are that. The kingdom of God is within you. You are no different. There's only God, and God is experiencing. We are one.
So there's no duality.
No duality.
In other words.
At the top of the mountain, there's only one essence.
So I wanted to ask you, too, do you think that being in the position that you were at that point in your life, that you were especially open to having that kind of what you would call a peak experience because you were at such a rock bottom point in your life? You know what I mean? Like, you have to be so humbled to be open to that kind of experience, because I got to tell you, Mary, I would love to see what you have seen and what other people have seen and written about. And I've read about all kinds of experiences like this, you know, with Ram Dass, you know, other people that have experienced these kind of peak experiences. So I would really, I'd really love to see this if possible. I really would.
Well,
but I'm wondering if you feel being at that point was what made it so conducive for you to have that.
Yes, I can experience it. It's the first time that my mind stopped thinking. Up until that point, the mind just thought. There was no room for anything but ego thought. And at that moment, I just gave up. I just gave in to my suffering. You can say it was full surrender. And my mind stopped thinking. And the space between thoughts is where the divine lives, in the space between thoughts. So as soon as that space became available, divinity just came right in.
And do you feel that's available to all of us?
It is us, because there's only one. There's no separation.
Right, but I mean for all of us to have that kind of experience.
Absolutely, and that's why I wrote the book. Because, you know, we seek, and it's time to find.
Right. And in your life prior to that was normal, right? I mean, you said as normal as we can all experience, right?
Well, I was a regular person in a bad relationship having, you know, problems and troubles and trying to find myself.
Sure.
And who was I? And I had all this history behind me that I was trying to deal with. And I was a birth mother, gave up a child for adoption. I was just just caught in the grips of the ego. And I had no sense of any other life. And once that shell is broken, once that ego identification is broken, then there's an experience of, wait a minute, I have a story, I'm not my story. Who am I?
So would you say there's really before and after? Like your life, you know, could never be the same after something like that.
Yes. And it was in my 40s that this happened, and I'm now 71. And your life is never the same. You're completely different, and it's a matter of learning how to assimilate this new understanding. And, you know, after I had that experience with Jesus, he had removed some kind of a veil from my third eye so that I could, when I looked at people, I could see their light, and I could see them as more than just their suffering. And I could feel, I had so much more compassion then and so much more love for people. I used to feel very, very separate. And after that, I felt so much more connected.
And it also put you on a different path. Just to let the listeners know, you know, your background was in health and you're a nurse and everything. And so after that experience, it kind of put you on a different path of healing. Is that right?
Yeah. Then I started looking at, well, at that time, you know, I was working in a hospital in an administrative office. At that time, I was in my last year of becoming a massage therapist because I needed massage and I loved it so much that I decided to become a massage therapist. And through that, I met someone who did Reiki, which is energy work with the chakras, and became interested in that, and everything unfolded. And then at that time, Shirley MacLaine's book came out, Out on a Limb, which I really resonated with. And at that time, I didn't even know what a psychic was or what a spiritual path was or any of that. So I came completely from being totally dead asleep in the ego world into this whole new dimension of consciousness, that there was something beyond the physical body, something beyond what the eyes see, something behind it.
And it sounds so beautiful. I mean, and after that, you know, when you walked outside and were able to see, you know, all this incredible light, mm-hmm. and have you ever been able to recreate that to be able to see that?
Well, it wasn't sort of much recreating, but I did get to experience it again even more profoundly when I had the experience of self-realization in July of 1988. As I was sitting outside on this meditation retreat site, and when I had that full experience, I was watching people walking. And so here I'm in this state of, I am that, and everything is this creation. There's all this consciousness, all this light of consciousness creating all of this. And I saw people walking by, and I could see that they had like this, you want to call it, I guess it's the halo, the soul, over their head. And I saw this twinkling of light coming down them like a Christmas tree. And I saw them, experienced them as God, and everything was God. They're God, I'm God, everything is God, everything's creation of God. And I thought, do they know that they are God? That was the thought that I had. Or are they, like I could see their troubles, what they were dealing with, their kind of their mind issues. And I thought, do they know that they are God? I want to yell to them and tell them, look at your soul, look, you're God, look. But I knew that I couldn't do that because they wouldn't understand the heck I was saying.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that it might not be received, you know, by everybody.
Right.
That's true.
And, but it's
so beautiful.
This whole other dimension, you know, when you awaken to these various into consciousness, when you realize that consciousness precedes matter, and that we are this living, walking consciousness inside these physical bodies, jammed into these physical bodies, in a system called the chakra energy system. It's quite amazing, and all I can say is the divinity within is so extraordinary that you cannot believe that this lives inside every person. But it was so natural when it happened. It felt so natural. And I felt like, I'm home, I am that I am. Thank you for delivering me from this suffering of this dualistic ego. And after 20 minutes, I had to return back. State dropped from the state of self-realization, I am that, back into the dualistic ego. And the first feeling, the feeling that I had was fear. Because fear is the first thing that happens when you're separated from your divine force. And then out of that fear, a lot of compensation with the ego and that sort of thing.
See, I can believe that we all have that divinity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, you said that you couldn't go back?
I could no longer hold that.
Oh, hold
state,
back.
But I knew that was the destiny, because that's what I was told. Here is your divinity, the divinity that awaits all mankind. And for the first time, you know, in history of humanity, we are having these conversations about consciousness. And people are waking up saying, wait a minute, there's more than just this life I'm living. I feel like there's something I'm seeking. And even people who, you know, they seek money and they get the money, but something's missing. And they get the new house, but something's missing. Get the good relationship, but something's missing. And all this money, why am I still not happy? And it's only because we are seeking our true source of oneness. We can have a personality. We can have a story, but don't get stuck in the story. You can use the story as a way to open the door to divinity, your true divine nature. It's so astonishing. And when I experienced it, I thought, wow, this is true living. I mean, this is my true nature. And the ego is just this horrible suffering of duality. No wonder people behave the way they do in this ego.
Because they have a distorted sense of self?
Yes, they have a distorted sense of not being whole, being separate. This fear, and I never knew I carried so much fear until I no longer carried fear when I was in the divine state of unity. In that divine state, there's just bliss and peace. There is no fear. You are that, and you are home.
Well, I can understand that. Like, I believe that, you know, like Christ said, you know, the kingdom of God is within you, and that we all do have that divine spark. But it seems like when you look around to the world around us, I mean, if everybody could have the experience that you had, you know, obviously we would have no war and hatred and people killing each other, you know.
Yes. Well, there's this great quote. There's this great quote from Mother Teresa, and she says, if we have no peace, it's because we have forgotten that we belong to each other.
Right.
We belong to each other in this oneness. We are one divine nature, and we are eternal, and that is the truth. And once you have that experience, the conviction is absolute, and no one can shake you from it. Absolutely. And the reason I so much wanted this book to come out is because the time is now to reclaim this, to reclaim our true state, to remembrance of it, to remember we are that. And to do the practice of remembrance and meditation, and to know it, and read books about it, and talk to people about it, and be with people who are seeking it, and do all those things, you know?
Well, there's definitely a lot of seekers here, at Hay House Radio. So I think this your story will, you know, definitely resonate with a lot of people out there because, I mean, I'm a seeker. You know, we're all, like you said, you know, we're searching. And I just, you know, would love for everybody to experience what you did. Then I think we wouldn't, you know, have any war. I don't know if that's possible. Maybe if we believe it is, it would happen. You know, for others to recognize that as well, you know, that there is no separation. And also I wanted to bring up, too, that I thought was important that after you had these experiences or the first one, I guess, you were able to release, you know, pain from the past, you know, feelings like guilt and shame that are so damaging. And this was so beneficial for you in your healing process. So I just wanted to talk about that just for a minute in releasing that. You know,
That's a very important point, Diane. It's a very important point because shame and guilt are just companions of the ego.
Right. And it gets passed down, right, through generations.
It gets passed down because if you're living in ego and you don't know you're that, well, that's the state you're going to pass down, right? And so this companions of the ego, we know them well. They're called guilt and shame and greed and pride and, you know, all of that. So our stories usually have a big background of guilt and shame. I mean, this is a common human condition. And when you realize you have a story, but you're not your story, then you can get a little separation from it and deal with whatever issues you're dealing with. And guilt and shame are just so persistent. They just keep you locked in this story. So then you tend to hide what your story is because you feel so guilty and shameful about it. And one of the reasons I really wanted to be transparent in this book was to write about the guilt and shame that I had in my life. And all the guilt and shame about, you know, giving up my baby and back in the 60s and the guilt and shame of having sex the first time and getting pregnant and being Catholic and, oh, my God. So it's just so many layers of this and so much pain and having to hide it, the fact that I had this baby and having to give this child up and hiding it from my family, hiding it from everybody.
And the damage that does, right?
The damage that does.
It caused so much damage in your own life.
So much damage. And it, you know, it basically created a life where I had would never have fulfilling relationships because I didn't have a fulfilling relationship inside myself. And I couldn't be, you know, I couldn't speak my truth. I always felt I was hiding something, and it just eats away at you. And it takes time, though, to be compassionate with yourself. It takes time to release these things and just keep being with people who are interested in releasing these sorts of feelings, understanding them, the compassion of it, find healers and therapists and friends and people who are being authentic with you and want to live authentic lives. By authentic, I mean living their true divine nature and not hanging on to their story and beating themselves up with it.
Right. And it seems like from reading the book, you know, when you were able to kind of work through that and it seemed like people come to you, like when you're willing to kind of, like you said, peel back those layers, then the people that you need to work with will appear.
They'll find you.
Yeah, they'll find you. And that was certainly true in your case, right?
Yes. I was very fortunate after my experience with Jesus. I kept seeking. I wanted a pair of clear eyes. You know, I just kept seeking this. I wanted to hear someone who spoke the truth the way he spoke the truth. Who could I find on this earth, you know, living? And I ended up going to this seminar on energy medicine, and I had the experience of light in my body with Jesus as Einstein's theory of relativity, energy equals mass times light. And I wanted to understand it sort of on an intellectual level, what my heart already knew. And this one person stood up, one of the speakers, and said, E equals MC squared. And I went, oh, my God, that's the person I need to speak to. And I ran over to him, and I said, I have to make an appointment with you. As it turns out, he was this energy healer. And I went to his office, and there was a picture on the wall of this monk. And I looked into the eyes of this monk, and I knew I had found the pair of eyes. this was to be my teacher, although I had no idea exactly what was going to happen with all of that. And it was through meeting this monk and having an initiation into the deeper state of divinity that I came to have the experience of self-realization and be profoundly changed forever, and to look at myself and everyone else as this divinity on earth. And our whole purpose here, the reason we're here, is to awaken to this amazing omniscience within us to create heaven on earth. And we create heaven on earth by creating it in ourselves, releasing the ego identification story, being compassionate with ourselves, finding people who can help us do that, to reclaim our true nature and create heaven on earth inside ourselves, and then to serve from that vantage point. This is our true calling. How we do it, everybody has different talents. But in the end, the true purpose of being here is to be self-realized, to reclaim that, to become what's called in Sanskrit a jivan mukta. Jivan means body. Mukta means liberation. One who is liberated while still in the body. You don't have to die and leave this earth plane in order to have that experience of divinity and heaven on earth. Now, I can tell you this because I did have an experience of death as well, in a very awakened state when I worked at MIT for a time. I think you may have read about that.
Right. You share that in the book, too. That's pretty amazing.
Yes. Amazing. It's been awakened. It was such an amazing. And at the end of it, as I have this experience, I'm taken out of my body and brought to the windows, what I can describe as heaven in a different state of consciousness. And I went to move towards it, and I was told it wasn't time yet. I had to go back, and I didn't know how to go back because I was now in my light body. I wasn't in my physical body, but I looked down, and there was this silver cord that I had to follow down to find this body that I had left somewhere. And then I remembered that Shirley MacLaine spoke about this silver cord when she was meditating and how she left her body and she found her way back to the silver cord. Well, there it was. So I zoom passing now through our solar system. I'm passing by all the planets. And that may sound odd, but it felt so right and natural. And I finally reach the building at MIT where this body is sitting meditating. That was me, Mary, sitting meditating. So I had no connection to that body whatsoever because I was in my true essence of consciousness. That is my true nature. Why would I go look for a body?
But you could just see the body like you were looking at a tree or anything else.
And I had no idea, am I a woman? Am I a man? What is that body I have to go back into? That's how unconnected I felt to that body because I was living in my true essence, my life force. So I go back into the body, I follow it through the top of the head, and the consciousness then, boom, permeates the physical body, and I go, oh, no, because it felt like such a tight shoe. And then I realized, wait a minute, you can't die. Your consciousness is all that exists, and it's separate from the body. Yes, consciousness precedes matter. Oh, my gosh, you can't die. There's no such thing as death. And then I thought, wait a minute. If there's no such thing as death, then there's no such thing as birth. You can't have birth without death, the concept of it. And I went, oh, my God, this whole thing's an illusion. Birth is an illusion. Death is an illusion because it's associated with the physical body and we associate ourselves with the physical body. The physical body has no life force except that of consciousness, divine consciousness, which animates it and informs it. And when this consciousness leaves, what people want you to know is that they're not dead. They're not dead.
And what's so interesting, you were working at MIT.
Yes.
And around people that, who might have a different idea of what that kind of experience would be. Did you ever discuss that with anybody, in the office?
I did work in the Space Center. So it was the Center for Theoretical Geocosmoplasma Physics, actually. So with these physicists and
I was just wondering what the physicists' take on that might have been.
Well, they're a little bit more open to it because they're examining all this space plasma out in space and the immensity of the universe and questioning all these things. And even though they're thinking about it in terms of creating formulas to describe the different energies, I was very fortunate that I had worked for a physicist who had some spiritual leaning. And so even though I didn't talk about this experience with him, he certainly appreciated meditation. And when I would go off on my retreat, he would, you know, wish me well and, you know. So, but I never really spoke with him about it.
That might have been interesting to see what he might say. I'm speaking with Mary Terhune. Oh, I just want to let people know the title of the book, about her book, Out of the Blue. And we're discussing her true life experiences of awakening, revelation, and transformation. And I was wondering if we would have time to take a call. Would you be open to talking to someone about a similar experience? Because I'd like to hear, we have one caller here who'd like to relate an experience.
Absolutely.
And let's go to Kim, and she's in Georgia on line one. And Kim, welcome to the show. We're talking with Mary Terhune today. Thanks for calling in.
Hi Diane.
Kim.
Thanks. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kim.
I am really excited to hear somebody actually talk about this because I had a similar experience. It wasn't a near-death experience, and it happened when I was 8 years old.
Mm.
And it had to be an authentic experience because 8-year-olds just don't think in those terms, you know.
Yeah.
I had been sitting by a creek, and I was staring at the sunlight on the water, and all of a sudden I became in a meditative state at 8. And I had this absolutely overwhelming sadness to be back on the earth, profound. And suddenly I was shown that this life wasn't going to be so bad, I guess compared to other lives, I don't know. And then I was given information on, I guess, what my existence was before this incarnation, if you will. So I was aware of being a very tiny speck of light in a massive universe filled with specks of light. And also having this sense of being all-knowing, the universe made complete sense to me, although I can't now tell you any details around that. And I also had the sense that even though I was this tiny, tiny speck of light, in one of trillions of specks of light, if I didn't exist, the entire universe would be out of balance. But it would never happen, because I was always this speck of light, and I will always be this speck of light. So does that make sense to you? I don't have a lot of details.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes sense.
I am so glad, because, you know, I sat on this for 40-some years, and I only recently have begun to relate it to people that I trust.
Yeah, so they say this whole universe was created out of this spark of light, right? This boom, this spark of light of divinity. And absolutely right. You are having a very authentic, real experience of your true nature as divine, which it is right now.
Right. It was the most, I mean, I just never knew what to do with it, being that young.
Yes.
But, you know, looking back on it, I know it had to be authentic. You just don't think that way at 8.
Absolutely, and it's a very authentic experience, and just remember that experience, you know, and keep remembering
That's my next question, Mary. You know, it's been so hard to keep to relate to that understanding and to keep that in my daily life. You know, the ego takes over at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how I can relate back to that and keep it.
Well, you know what? you can do something really simple by going into your own breath. So you, the breath, you know, the space between the breath, you breathe in, pause, breathe out. And the space between the breath is where eternity lives, your true nature. So as you're walking around, in the space between the breath and breathe. Let yourself breathe in, pause, breathe out, pause. And it's through this remembrance, calling forth. You're calling forth your true identity and nature, identifying with it. Keep calling it forth. It's a practice. The practice of remembrance. I do it every moment of every day. And when I get caught up in something, and I went, oh, I forgot. Oh, right. And then back to remembering and to calling forth and living in the consciousness of one's true divine nature. This is the task of humanity, especially right now. This is the task of humanity. We can do it. It lives in us as us. There's only God, and God is experiencing. We are that. Each of us, in all of its fullness, in all of its greatness, for all eternity, we can never die. We were never born.
That's exactly it. Yeah, you just are. You just are, and you always have been, and you always will be.
Yes. And
when that's cool
fear, when
that's really,
fear,
you know,
death, you know, that whole notion,
you know,
it's a concept we relate to the physical body. But we are not our physical bodies. We have them, but we are not them. Live in this world, but not of this world, right?
Mm-hmm. So, Kim, do you feel a little less alone in that sense, hearing Mary's story?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I sat on it for a very long time. I didn't know what to do with it at that age. But it's always kind of been in the back of my mind, and I've gone back to it, you know, in times of stress. But I'm glad to know that I'm not crazy.
Absolutely not. This is your true self. Every day, in every moment, as every day, as much as you can remember, keep identifying with it and calling it forth. You're calling forth your essence to live in it. Just keep calling it forth.
I will do that. It's a wonderful secret to have. It almost feels like a secret, but everybody's got the same secret tucked away somewhere that they're just not even aware of. I don't know.
Everyone belongs to the Lord's club. This is true. But we have forgotten, and so we walk around forgetting who we are. But you remember, each person now, it's our task, it's humanity's task, it's our dharma, it's our task to wake up and remember our true nature. It's ours, it belongs to us. And if we want it, we can ask for it.
Well, Kim, I'm so glad you could share this story. It's so cool to hear someone else who's had a similar experience.
I am
it's,
too.
It's pretty amazing.
Thank you, Kim. That was very precious.
I'm looking forward to getting your book. Thank you.
Yeah, hold on, Kim. We'll send you a copy, okay? Hang on there and we'll get that out to Kim. We'll get her address.
Wonderful.
Pretty amazing.
Wonderful.
You know, I wonder, Mary, if you did like a survey or something on your website, and just because there's probably a lot of people like Kim that are sitting on an experience.
Yeah.
They're not sure, you know, what happened. Maybe they need some kind of validation or just someone to discuss it with. That would be kind of an interesting thing, you know, to see how many people are really out there who have had, you know, that kind of experience of connection like that.
Yes, and this is why Hay House Radio and all the work Hay House is doing is so important, to bring out this message, speak about these things. Because when we speak about something, we bring it into reality. That's how we create. We create through our speech. So we're creating a remembrance. We're creating heaven on earth inside of our souls, one step at a time.
And it's okay to talk about this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's a safe place here.
This is like the most important thing to talk about. And the more we talk about it, the more it shows up. The more we talk about it, the more it shows up.
Well, we have about 10 minutes left of the show. I did want to touch on something else that was an important part of the book, and that was your work with healing and homeopathy. And I thought that was really interesting because my, I guess, understanding of what homeopathy is, I thought it was like, you know, just healing with with herbs, with nature, you know, that kind of thing, which is a part of it, but it's really a lot more than that. And yeah, I was hoping you could explain a little bit about that for us.
Right. Well, homeopathy, the word homeopathy means similar suffering. And this concept of the basic law of homeopathy is the law of similars, so the law of like cures like. And Hippocrates knew of this concept, but it was a physician back in 1755, who was born in 1755, Samuel Hahnemann, who was really disturbed by his medical training. He really felt that he had really nothing to offer people to really help them out of their suffering. And he was just a brilliant, brilliant mind, and he read a lot of books, and he translated a lot of medical books, and he discovered this law of similars. And so he tested it out. And the law of similars means that any substance, and it's a substance from nature, it could be a plant, it could be a mineral, any substance that could cause symptoms in a healthy person could heal those symptoms in someone experiencing those same symptoms using micro substances, micro doses that are so highly diluted that there are no material particles in it, just an energetic information. So energetic information packets of consciousness. So it's consciousness-based medicine. It's energy-based medicine. Just like acupuncture is consciousness-based medicine. Reiki is really consciousness-based medicine. And so is homeopathy. And it's different from herbal medicine, because herbal medicine actually uses the material level of a plant. But in homeopathy, it's so highly diluted that now it's on an energetic level. And Hahnemann believed that there was this vital force in us that organized everything within us, and he calls the vital force. I experienced it, of course, as divine consciousness that innervates and informs everything and lets the body perform its miracles. And when this vital force leaves, we call it death. But of course, you can't die. Just the body itself, which had no life whatsoever without this consciousness, seems like it's alive. So in order to work with this physical body, homeopathy does this through working with the consciousness of this physical body through the basic law of like cures like. And I had an amazing experience with this, because I was suffering from, this is before I knew homeopathy, I was suffering from a thyroid problem, and I didn't want to have to take drugs, synthetic drugs. And so someone said, well, then you're going to have to see this homeopath, and it was a homeopathic nurse. And I went to see her, and she took my case, and it was so interesting how she took my case. She said, well, what do people complain about in you? And I said, well, that's a strange question. And then I realized with all the questions she was trying to get at, who is this person, Mary, and what issues is she dealing with? These multidimensional issues, right, in the emotions, in the mind, as well as that these physical symptoms appearing in the body. And she gave me a remedy based on taking my case. I took this remedy home. It was in water. She put it in water. And I was told to take a teaspoon of it in my mouth and then wait a couple of days. So I remember standing at the sink. And prior to this, I had filled out this whole timeline that she told me to fill out for her, which was basically all never-well-since events in my life. Never well since my dog died, never well since my mother left, never well since I gave up my baby, never well since whatever it was in my life. And I realized I had a lot of grief in my life over relationships. And this remedy that she gave me was a grief remedy that dealt with relationships. So I put this in my mouth, one teaspoon in my mouth, I'm standing by the sink, and all of a sudden my consciousness catapults out of my body into the black void. And I see this little spark, like a star, twinkling, and I realize, oh, that's the grief and the issues I'm dealing with. They're stuck there in this consciousness. Then all of a sudden, I saw the remedy coming towards it as another little twinkle of light that matched the same twinkle of light that I was suffering from when my consciousness was stuck. And as soon as these two little twinkling stars met each other, boom! There was an explosion and a release, and boom, I went back into my body. And I realized, oh my gosh, that's how it heals. The consciousness of nature heals the consciousness of humanity through the law of like cures like, through this release that occurs when the two of them meet through this law. And it's a basic law in nature, basic law in us.
And it's so interesting, this system. I mean, it's been around for years, right?
260 years.
Isn't that incredible?
Yes, and it's becoming more and more popular now, especially as we realize that consciousness is everything. And that if we're only treating a physical body, we're not treating the multidimensional levels that we have. We need both. We need both acute medicine, we need trauma medicine, and we need the consciousness-based medicine. We need prevention and cure. We need to work these systems together.
Absolutely.
Allopathy is more the masculine approach to health, using, you know, kind of forcing the body. And homeopathy is more the feminine part, allowing the body to heal. You need both. You have to have both to address all the needs of humanity. And I have used both and continue to use both. It's just that I use less drugs than people use. You know, I use homeopathy. But essentially, you know, if you break a leg, please go to the hospital, you know. And
right,
hopefully,
right.
Hopefully at the hospitals you're putting together, they'll give you homeopathic arnica to bring down the swelling and bleeding, and some synphytin to help to knit the bone more quickly.
Well, there's such a need for a whole person approach, like you're describing with this, you know, and to look back at all of the emotional components. And I've always thought that, you know, there's such a thing as cellular memory, and things can be held onto for years that are going to cause physical problems, you know, and we've seen it over the years. This is such a fascinating system, you know, like you said, that's been around for like 200 years. Hopefully it will continue to grow as more and more people become more interested in it. I mean, you know, luckily here in Southern California, you know, I see, you know, people that are homeopaths, and there's advertisement. There's a lot of information on the web if any listeners want to explore that further. And do you treat people in that way now as well? Because you do see people and you talk to people and counsel them.
I don't have a homeopathic practice. At 71, that would be, it's a little too much, especially with everything else I'm trying to do. And my own, you know, just my own physical being doesn't have that same strength to do it. But I still see some massage clients and do energy work that way. But of course, I educate them and suggest that they go to a particular homeopath, or maybe they might want to try a remedy for, you know, for just a little acute event. But when it comes to chronic cases, you really do need to see a homeopath and have your case treated. And, you know, it was the medical doctors, the homeopaths of Europe, that brought it here to the United States, you know, back in the 1800s. And it really flourished here for quite some time.
But and you share a great story in the book about with Scarlett Lewis.
Oh, with Scarlett.
I was just going to mention one of our other authors, Nurturing Healing Love, and you can read the story in the book. I won't go into it because we only have about a minute and a half left of the show, but you share a really amazing healing story with her, and I think people should explore this. You know, I thought it was fascinating because I had heard of homeopathy, but I never really understood exactly what it was. You know, I thought it was more just herbal. You know, herbal medicine, but it's definitely a lot more than that.
And, you know, the more we become conscious that consciousness is all, we'll ask for consciousness-based medicine. It is simply just going to show up. We're just going to speak it into reality, just like we're speaking our divine nature into reality.
Right. Well, there's a place for it. I mean, I had a Reiki treatment, you know, like a year or so ago, and I was very skeptical of what that was going to be. And there was definitely something going on, you know, things were moving around, and I could feel, you know, like blood moving through my veins. It was pretty incredible. Now, unfortunately, we're out of time. Mary, you're such a fascinating person. We have to have you back on the show. I could talk to you for a lot longer, but I wanted to send people to your website, maryterhune.com. And would you welcome people's questions and comments?
Absolutely. There's a form there. So it's Mary Terhune, Terhune. And I would love, of course, at some point to have more speakers calling in. I would love to do something else with you, Diane. That would be wonderful. Well, and I appreciate, I just want to give Kim a shout out. Thank you so much for sharing that, having the courage to speak it. It's just beautiful. Thank you.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for being a part of the show. We'll definitely have you back. Mary Terhune, the book is Out of the Blue: True Life Experiences of Awakening, Revelation, and Transformation.